That song that we just sang is an old popular song, but there's a couple thoughts that I want to draw your attention to. Just a couple of thoughts. 'Tis so sweet to trust in Jesus. How I proved Him o'er and o'er. That reading that Ed had for us this morning from 2 Samuel chapter 22. David recounted over and over and over again how he had proved God. How God was the rock of his refuge. How he could trust in Him. Then the song ends that Kevin just led us with, "Oh, for grace to trust Him more." Well, I hate to jump to the punchline, but that's one of the thoughts that I'd really like for us to leave with in our study this morning. A month ago, in our table talk and discussion of the contribution, I referred to a passage out of 2 Samuel chapter 24, and I'd like to look at that just a little bit again this morning with you. That'll be 2 Samuel chapter 24. There's a parallel passage that we'll also be referring to, and that is in 1 Chronicles chapter 21. So if you mark those with your thumbs as we look at this piece of Scripture, it might be a benefit to you. Now, David has been referred to by God Himself as a man after God's own heart. But as we look at David, getting the right hole. Maybe it might. There you go. We see several thoughts that jump to mind as how David could be a man after God's own heart. His relationship with God. And truly that passage out of chapter 22 of 2 Samuel just resonates with that relationship with God. One of the first images we have of David is David as a young man, as a boy, coming to the defense of the name of God. As that giant slandered God? All the audacity. And his slandering of those who believed in God. Yes, I'm talking about David and Goliath. He defended the chosen one of God as even as Saul tried to kill him and put him out of his misery. That's Saul's misery. David refused to end it by killing God's anointed one. He was the builder of God, the city of God. He praised God throughout his Psalms. He was a ruler of God's fulfilled promise. As a matter of fact, in 2 Samuel chapter 8 and verse 15, we read that David reigned all of Israel, administering justice is what the ESV says, and the New American Standard. The King James says that he administered judgment and equality. Judgment and righteousness, the New American says. Judgment and justice, the King James says. That was what David did. He was a man after God's own heart. But David was not Mr. Clean. He was a murderer and an adulterer. He was perhaps one of the poorest examples of fatherhood besides Eli. You remember Eli? Eli had the sons that were to follow him in the priesthood that were drunken scoundrels and that forced people to alter God's plan of sacrifice so that they could fill their bellies? Well, David raised his family in such a way that his daughter was raped by her stepbrother or half-brother, and another brother, her brother, murdered him. Now, doesn't that just sound like a perfect picture of family togetherness? That is David. He was a ruler, yes, he was a ruler of God's people. He was a ruler in turmoil that did not even keep his own people under control. As there was not one, but there was what? Two rebellions where the kingdom was almost ripped out of his hands by his own son Absalom and again by that Sheba, by that person called Sheba. And so just to set the setting of what we want to look at this morning, turn with me to 2 Samuel chapter 24. 2 Samuel chapter 24. Let's begin back in 21. In 21, I want to look at only one verse. David is reigning in chapter 21. This is toward the end of his life. And chapter 21, verse 1 says, "And now there was a famine in the days of David for 3 years. Year after year, and David sought the face of the Lord." What had happened? Well, to make a long story short, what happened was justice, God's justice, had not been done. Justice delayed is justice denied, and God had to get people's attention to say, it ain't going to happen no more. God believes in justice. God administers justice. So, there was a famine to get David's attention, to get the people's attention. Justice had to be administered. The rest of that chapter, chapter 21, talks about the wrong that had been done to the people of Gideon and how God allowed that to be corrected. Chapter 22, 2 Samuel. Ed read some selected songs when we conversed about his reading passage for this morning. I told him there's 51 verses. Could you please select some? And he did an admirable job. The feeling that he gave to us, Ed, in his reading, highlights the feeling of David toward God. God is my deliverer. God is my refuge. God is my rock. Chapter 23, the book of 2 Samuel. We have, again, the last words of David, and we have a review of some of the strong men, some of the valiant men of David's day and his army. Chapter 24. I'm going to tell you right now, here is the 3 points to today's lesson. It all comes from 2 Samuel chapter 24 and is also found in 1 Chronicles chapter 21. Here are the 3 points. Foolish pride brings God's wrath. Point number one, foolish pride brings God's wrath. Point number two, mercy of God. The mercy of God. We'll get to that in a minute. The third point, and this is the point that I reiterated or referred to about a month ago, was the value of cheap worship. The value of cheap worship. Now, I'm going to pause right here and make a statement. Not in my thoughts, but it jumped to my mind. And that is, the purpose of this morning's lesson is not to increase our contribution. It is not to twist your arm. I want to look at the lesson that we can learn about the value of worship. Well, there's a couple thoughts that we need to think about as we look at 2 Samuel chapter 24 and we look at 1 Chronicles chapter 21. You read 2 Samuel chapter 24 and it says, God was angry with Israel and he incited David. that what it reads in your version? Pretty much. 1 Chronicles chapter 21 says, and God was angry with Israel, and what? Who did it? Satan incited Israel. So I think it takes us just a second for us to remember that God Himself is not tempted. James chapter 1, verse 13 and following. Let no man say that when he is tempted, I am tempted of God, for God can't be tempted. And He Himself tempts no one. So, let's just look at this. 2 Samuel chapter 24, verse 1. God is angry with Israel. Satan tempted David. God is angry with Israel, and He allowed David by the influence of his own heart, through the power of Satan, to do wrong. He allowed him to. That's the same thing. James says, but when each person is tempted, when he is what? Lured and enticed by his own desire. Own desire. Okay. Now that we understand that God allowed David, when David made up his mind what he was going to do, that he was going to do something that was against the plan of God, through the incitement of Satan, God stepped back. That's how He is with us. That's what He tells us in Romans chapter 1, that when we have made up our minds that we're going to ignore God, what does He do? God is not in the business of just beating your head, saying, I'm here. He'll let you follow your own footsteps. So, let's look at another thought. There's a census. What is the temptation? The census, I believe, is the whole issue. In this passage, in 2 Samuel chapter 24 and 1 Chronicles chapter 21, David decided that he was going to run a census. That he wanted to know the size of the people that he ruled. Now, there's maybe something to boast about. According to Numbers chapter 2 and verse 32, at Mount Sinai, there were 603,550 men who were over the age of 20 that could take up arms. At the end of the book of Numbers, in chapter 26, verse 51, the people are numbered again by the direction of God, and we find that there are 601,730 men of the same category. Wow. Isn't that interesting? Here we've had battle after battle, and we fought this and we fought that. We just got through this three-year famine. By the way, did anybody see that picture of the child that was afflicted by famine that was in the paper today? Yeah. Wasn't that a strong picture? It was. The bones could be seen through the skin. Sad. The effects of famine. So what is the size of the people? Well, it's either 1.3 million or 1.5 million. But isn't that something to boast about? Look! You're Americans. Do you feel like you're the greatest nation on earth? Some do, some don't. We may not say it, but if we have the occasion to go to another land, don't we kind of feel a little bit, puffed up about it? I think that's what David did too. He was a little bit puffed up. Well, let's look at this a little bit different. There is a contrast between 2 Samuel chapter 24 and 1 Chronicles chapter 21. 2 Samuel 24 says there were 800,000 men of the age of 20 and above that could bear arms, and 500,000 in Judah of the same category. The recording in chapter 21 of Chronicles gives us a different number. Well, that could cause some people some problem until we understand what's going on. In 1 Chronicles chapter 27, verses 23 and 24, we read that whereas David counted only the males over the age of 20 that could bear arms, Joab didn't take his responsibility, his instructions very seriously, and he just started counting. Read that in 1 Chronicles chapter 27, verses 23 and 24. And Joab counted males under the age of 20. You know what's interesting? And he stopped. But he didn't even bother to count the people of the children of, or the children of the tribe of Israel, of Benjamin. Huh. Okay. Difference in numbers. Okay. They do use different principles, different guiding principles. Those who bear arms over 20 and anybody that breathes. Well, there's one other thought I want to bring to your attention between these two passages, chapter 24 of 2 Samuel and chapter 21 of 1 Chronicles. And that is in Samuel, the owner of the land that is discussed in chapter 24 is called Araunah. Denny, did I do close enough? Araunah. In 1 Chronicles chapter 21, he's named Ornan. Now that might cause some confusion and conflict, but there are several thoughts that we really need to understand. In the Hebrew language, in the oldest text that we have, there are zero vowels. Did you catch that? There are no vowels in the Hebrew written language from the oldest text that we have. Should there be a... That is the reason why the word YHWH, nobody knows how to pronounce that word. In Exodus chapter 3, verse 14, where God says, and I am that... What? I am? YHWH? Nobody knows how to pronounce it. Later generations of the Hebrews did not then add the vowel symbols to tell us what was an I or an O or a U or a Z or what. There's only the four letters. Well, how do we get the word Jehovah? Well, later generations of Hebrews added the word Adonai for Lord. And we have taken the vowels from Adonai and added them to YHWH, and we've come up with a good English word. Jehovah. Jehovah. But I find it interesting about names. Names are important. But you know, my dad's official name is Paul Dean Dyer. Sounds simple. One syllable each word. At work, he was called PD. To the family, his siblings, his brothers and his sister, he was simply known as Dean. Is he the same person? Yeah. Very same person. So I don't see that this issue is an issue. There's one other thought that I want to do in a comparison between these two passages in 2 Samuel chapter 24 and 1 Chronicles chapter 21. That is, in Samuel, it's recorded that David paid 50 shekels of silver. In 1 Chronicles chapter 21, that he paid 600 shekels of gold. Well, that could be confusing for some people. But when we read the text carefully, we read in 2 Samuel chapter 24, David says, let me buy the threshing floor. The place where you are grinding the wheat. I want this place to buy. Read your text in 1 Chronicles chapter 21. You'll read that he paid 600 shekels of gold for the place. He didn't just buy the threshing floor. He bought the plates. Maxine, he bought the whole farm. He didn't just buy the house. He bought the whole farm. This is what's recorded in 1 Chronicles chapter 21. Well, enough of an introduction, and my time's almost getting close, so I want us to look at these two passages. We'll begin in 2 Samuel chapter 24, and we'll read that David gives the instruction, go number the children of Israel and Judah. Joab, his right-hand man, says, really? Okay, that's not what he said. He said, you don't need to do that. God will magnify your people. Then we see that Joab didn't really take it seriously. In 2 Samuel, we have the reading where he went out and crossed the Jordan River, and he made his trip. It took him 9 months. What was it? 9 months and how many days? 20 days, verse 8, to make his journey to go across the Jordan, go all up along the eastern coast of the kingdom, all the way up to Dan, and then all the way back down along the coast to Beersheba, making his camp. 9 months, 20 days. But we read in verse 10, but David's heart struck him after he had numbered the people, and he said, I have sinned greatly in what I have done. There is recognition that what David did superseded, that exceeded, he went beyond, he did not. What was that song we just sang? Oh, for grace to trust thee more. And David's heart struck him, and he was grieved in his heart. Look with me in the reading there in Chronicles, 1 Chronicles chapter 21. Starting in verse 7, but God was displeased with this thing, and he struck Israel. And David said to God, I have sinned. Again, we have him, what? Confessing himself. Confessing his sin. You know, that's a big difference from what we see today, isn't it? Today, it's everybody is doing it. It's not that bad. David said, I have sinned. Verse 7. I have sinned greatly in that I have done this thing. Please now, take the iniquity of your servant, for I have acted very foolishly. He owned up to it. He owned up to his sin. He was bold. He was presumptuous. He forgot about God and decided to, what? Check all resources he had. Number the people. How great I am. He had forgotten God. So, we have the foolishness that brings God's wrath. Well, there's some consequences, because every time there's sin, there's what? Consequences. Wasn't it Paul that wrote in Romans chapter 6 and verse 23, for the wages of sin are... What is death? It's separation from God. God told Adam and Eve, in the day you eat of this fruit, you shall surely... And he kicked them out of the garden. He separated them from him. That's the fruit of sin. So there are consequences. And so he gives David the opportunity to make one of three choices. How shall I punish you? Shall I give you 7 years of famine? Shall I give you 3 years where your enemies are nipping at your heels and destroying you in battle? or 3 days of pestilence. 3 days of pestilence. David determines. Remember, we just saw 3 years of famine. David determines a famine. What does a famine do? A famine destroys the very nature of the society. It eats at the land. It eats at the people. It eats at the animals. The famine will obstruct and destruct. It will impact everybody and everything. War. Three months of destruction and war. Who is going to pay the price? Those of you who have been in the military, who paid the price? The soldiers did. Who is going to pay the price for David's sin? David says, "Let it be me." God says, "No, you can't have it that light." One of these three choices, is going to pay the price. David begs to be thrown to the mercy of God and not to man. So he marks out. Go ahead and mark out those 3 months of losses. Mark out those 3 years of famine or 7 years of famine. Throws himself on the mercy of God. 3 days of pestilence. Let God determine through His merciful dealings who is going to pay the price. We know the answer to that question is 70,000 people died. 70,000 people were obstructed. Who's going to pay the price? Jesus taught a parable of a servant who, when he owed a humongous amount, more than what several lifetimes worth of service would be able to pay back, his master called him in, and what did the master do? He forgave the debt. What did that servant do? He went out and he found a servant that owed him money, and he tried to take it away from him. He threw him into jail, demanding payment. What happened to that servant? The first servant, when the ruler found out, and the master found out, was immediately, what? Imprisoned. His family was sold. Why? Who's going to pay this price? There's an impact. Well, there's one other thought that I want to, or a couple of thoughts we want to leave you. David says, "I'm in great distress. Let me fall into the hand of the Lord, for His mercy is great. Don't let me fall into the hand of man." Even in our bestest, whose interest is in your mind? Is that a bad question to ask? You know I love meatloaf, right? Yeah. I love it right up there with Brussels sprouts, I think. So what does that tell you? When I'm preparing meals or when I'm thinking about food preparation, I am thinking of what pleases who? You know I like spicy food. I do. I'm concerned about what's good for me. And David says, "Don't let me fall at the hands of man, but let me fall into the hand of a merciful God." Well, God is merciful. He cares for us. That Jesus reiterated that in Matthew chapter 6. And He tells us that God knows how to give good gifts. He is concerned that we understand that God is graceful, God is merciful, and in Him we can trust. Well, our time's up. We're going to get to our point. Our last point was, David worships God. He did so. Now, we talked about that, and only just got it in brief thought here, but in 1 Chronicles chapter 21, this is what we read. Starting in about verse 22, 21. And David came to Ornan, and Ornan looked up and saw David and went out from the threshing floor and paid homage to David with his face under the ground. And David said to Ornan, give me the site of the threshing floor that I may build on it an altar to the Lord and give it to me at full price that the plague may be averted from the people. Then Ornan said to David, take it. Let my lord the king do what seems good to him. I shall give the oxen for the burnt offerings and the threshing sledges for wood and the wheat for the grain offering. I give it all. But David, here's the man after God's own heart. But David, King David, said to Ornan, no, I will buy them for the full price. I will not take for the Lord what is yours, and nor will I offer up burnt offerings that will cost me nothing. So he paid Ornan 600 shekels of gold by the weight for the site. And David built there an altar to the Lord and presented burnt offerings and peace offerings. And he called unto the Lord, and the Lord answered him with fire from heaven upon the altar of the burnt offering. Then the Lord commanded the angel, and he put his sword back into his sheath. Price has been paid. What was the value of David's worship? What did it cost him? Oh, I know the 600 shekels. But it cost more than that. It cost a burnt offering where the animal was totally fumed up unto God as a consecration, as an atonement for his wrongdoing, for his sin. It cost him a grain offering. That showed the devotion and the thanksgiving that he has to God because God is merciful. It was also his peace offering, showing the peaceful relationship with God because of sin had been paid for and removed. My question this morning as we close and look at those two chapters, chapter 21 of 1 Chronicles and 2 Samuel chapter 24, is how often do we get trumped up with our foolish pride? And that becomes a barrier of sin between us and God. The consequences of it. David put himself in the hands of God at his mercy. Truly, mercy of God is the only place we can seek peace. The conclusion. Value of worship. What's it worth to worship a merciful God? What would you give? Oh, yes, Jesus gave the parable of the great price, and he talked about the woman who lost her coins and cleaned out her room. What does it cost you to worship a merciful God? Well, this morning we want to leave this message, these three points from 2 Samuel chapter 24 and 1 Chronicles chapter 21 with you. Let you ponder them. The thought of our own foolishness that brings sin through the pride that we exhibit, the mercy of God, and finally, cost of worship. Jesus said, take my yoke upon you. Take it. For it is light and easy. But that means we need to do something. We've got to do something. That first step is to be united with Christ in baptism. If you haven't been born a child of God, then you don't understand the mercy that he extends for you. You don't understand the ultimate separation that we have between God because of our sins. He begs, he pleads. Be born of him. If there's anything that we can do, whether to be help you to be united with Christ in baptism or you have something to bring before the body, make it known now as we sing the song that Kevin has selected.